You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello, hello, welcome, welcome, welcome. If you're a new listener or viewer, great to have you here. If you've already listened to a few or watched a few before, great to have you back. However you're here, the important thing is you are here. So let's get on with it. What are we talking about in this episode? This episode, we're going to be looking all about fears and phobias. Fears and phobias. We're going to take a look at why we even have fears, why we have phobias, what's the difference between a fear and a phobia, how do we even get them, and can we get rid of them? Those are the things we're going to take a look at, so let's dive straight in. It's this episode. It's just you and me, dear listener or dear viewer, depending on how you're catching this. Just you and me. And actually, depending on how you catch this, remember to hit subscribe. Remember to leave a review. Remember to like us, whatever it is. Anyway, let's dive in. So, why do we have fears? Because the reality is, when we're born, we are born without fear. Nobody is born with fear. We're born completely fearless. As parents of young babies will know, they are completely fearless, which can sometimes cause problems, stresses, and fears for the parents. But when we're born, we have no fear. So how come we have fears? Well, it's all to do with our unconscious mind doing its job, which is to keep us alive, to keep us safe. That's the primary function of the unconscious mind, is to keep us alive, to keep us safe, to protect us. And it does that by learning as much as it can from everything that goes around it. It analyses what happens, it applies meanings to our experiences, excuse me, and from that, it kind of learns how we respond to different things. When we do things in life, generally, we don't work it out from first principles every time. If we decide to pick up a glass, we don't try and work out how to move a hand, an arm, and how to grip the glass, and all these sorts of things. We know how to do that because we've done it so many times. It's kind of like rule books. So our unconscious mind's got rules and programs, if you like. It's kind of like your software on your computer, yeah? It's got programs that it runs for each individual thing. Anytime it encounters a situation, it checks to see what programs it's got that tell it how to handle that situation. And which means it then knows how to react. And that's where fears and phobias come in. Because at some point, something has happened and our unconscious has decided this is something which poses us a risk and it's something of which we should be afraid. Now, it could be something happened to us and that triggered lots of emotion for us and it gave us a scare. And so our unconscious goes, this is something that's scary, avoid it. If you encounter the situation again, run. It could be we observed or we saw somebody else acting in that particular way. We see somebody, I mean, for example, suppose... This is definitely true for phobias. It also works. It's also true for fear. Suppose you see a parent who every time they see a spider, they freak out. Your parent absolutely freaks out every time they see a spider. Very quickly, our unconscious decides that tiny little creepy crawly thing must be a major threat because even our parent is freaking out. Because, well, you know, when we're really, really young, our parents, they're kind of like gods, right? Nothing fazes them. They're indestructible as far as we're concerned. And if they are scared by something, it must be something to be scared of. So we learn to be scared of it. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Or we may keep getting told over and over and over again, something is scary, something is dangerous. And we absorb that. We take that in. And we believe and act accordingly. Now, some fears are very, very, I'm going to say valid. I don't want to get into the whole valid and invalid fears, but valid's as good a word as any. They're justifiable. Some fears are justifiable because the thing of which we're afraid poses us a very real risk of harm or worse. So, I mean, if you stick your hand into a fire, it burns, right? It hurts. So we kind of get afraid of sticking a hand into the fire. We're not going to do it again. And that's a good thing, because that is something which can cause us harm. Very real harm. So it's all manner of fears we develop, which are part of our self-protection, our survival mechanism. And that's our unconscious mind doing a cracking job of keeping us alive. And your mind has done a great job of keeping you alive, right? Because you're here, yeah? And the fact that you're here means your unconscious has done an excellent job of keeping you alive. Phobias, however, are... Well, let's take a look. What is the difference between a fear and a phobia? Because people will sometimes use the terms interchangeably, and they kind of develop in similar ways, but there is a big difference. And I would say that the difference is that a phobia is an intense, irrational fear of something that poses you no real threat or harm. An intense, irrational fear of something that poses you no threat or no harm. So let's take a look at what might be the difference between a rational fear and an irrational fear. Heights. Heights is a great one. A lot of people have an aversion to heights. Some are like mildly, ooh, and some have a full-on phobia of heights. So if the thought of climbing up onto the roof and running along the ridge tiles, if that makes you feel a little bit, ooh, not so sure I should do that, bit scary, good. That is a fear that has a very rational basis, because yeah, you could fall and injure or kill yourself, right? It poses a very real risk. So yeah, being afraid of doing something like that, that's a valid fear. It's a justifiable fear. Where a fear of heights turns into a phobia is even if it's just the thought of perhaps being on the 20th floor of a skyscraper, nowhere near the windows, but just coming out to the lift and stepping onto that 20th floor. There are people for whom that generates a lot of fear. And it poses no risk or whatsoever. They know it's safe. But there's that irrational fear because of heights. Or it might be that you are in, say, an aeroplane, and you're fine when it's on the ground. You don't mind the takeoff and all that sort of stuff, but you look out the window, it's like, whoa, no! We're 30,000 feet above the sky, above the ground, and I am now petrified because of the height. Again, it's irrational because you are perfectly safe. You're not going to fall anywhere. So, a phobia is an intense, irrational fear of something that causes you no harm. Fear of spiders is a very common one. Phobia of spiders, where you get the... And we'll talk about the intensity in just a moment. But having a phobia of spiders, it's irrational because we know the spider poses us no threat, right? I mean, particularly when you're talking about your common house spider here in the UK, poses you absolutely no threat whatsoever. You are far more dangerous to it than it ever would be to you. And yet, for so many people, and I know this because I used to have three phobias. I had a phobia around meeting and speaking with strangers, social phobia, a genuine, real strong phobia of that. I had a very strong phobia of heights, and I had a strong phobia of spiders. See a spider on the floor, I'd be like, climb up on the chair, get away from it. Even though I knew it poses no risk, no threat to me whatsoever. So, get it away. And that's the thing with a phobia. With phobias, we know they're irrational. And it's no use telling someone who's got a phobia, it's no use telling them, oh, get over it, it's irrational, it can't hurt you. We know it's irrational. I remember one time some friends of mine were moving house. So I was with a husband. We went to the garage to clear the garage out. We moved a big sheet of wood that was against the wall, and billions of spiders, I don't know, there must have been a couple of dozen, but it felt like billions of spiders, all scuttled out from behind the thing. He and I, backs against the other wall, kind of like, ooh, God, I hope those things go away. I turned to him and said, oh, this is silly, isn't it? I mean, we're more of a threat to them than they are to us. He went, I know, it doesn't help, does it? Nope. When you have a phobia, you know it's irrational. So it's no use telling someone with a phobia, hey, it's irrational, get over it. We know it's irrational. But we can't just get over it. And we'll look why that is in just a moment. But a phobia is an intense, irrational fear of something that poses you no threat. Now, what do I mean by intense? By intense, it's not just a sort of mild, little bit of a shiver. We are talking full on. You're kind of getting into panic attack, anxiety type symptoms for many people with strong phobias. But it's, you would do anything to get away from it. Even just the thought of the thing makes you kind of break out into that cold sweat. You can feel maybe your hands starting to tremble a little bit, heart starting to race. Even just the thought of the thing. It's a very intense reaction. You might start screaming, you might start shivering. Oh God, I really have to get away from that. Ah! So it's an intense, irrational fear. That's what a phobia is. Whereas a normal fear is much less intense. So that's kind of the difference between them. So it's really important that we only use the term phobia when we're talking about phobias. It's far too often people say, oh, I've got a phobia about X. And what they really mean is, oh, X is a little... makes me feel a little uncomfortable, but that's as far as it goes. So phobia is really an intense, irrational fear of that thing. So even if we know that the thing we're scared of poses no threat, why can't we just rationalise ourselves out of it? And it's all to do with the way in which our mind works. We've got kind of like three levels. To the way it works. We've got our unconscious mind, which processes all the stuff. That's where all our normal day-to-day stuff goes. All our emotions, the unconscious is the domain of emotions. All emotions come from the unconscious. The conscious is the bit we think with. It's our awareness. That's the bit that you're aware of listening to me. That's your conscious. Or when you think about things, you're consciously thinking about them. That's your conscious. And that is often a much more methodical, logical area of things. The conscious is emotional and kicks in much more quickly than the unconscious is domain of emotion and kicks in much more quickly than the conscious. And below the unconscious level, you've got that really, really core bit, kind of like the reptilian brain, fight or flight, the bit that's kind of on the lookout for emergencies. The thing that's really there purely to spot danger and keep you alive. And that acts very, very fast. It has to. Because if it didn't, then it wouldn't spot danger quickly enough for you to be able to do something about it. So when you encounter this thing that you've got a phobia of, that really core part identifies this is a threat. This is a major threat to us. Because that's its job. Our unconscious focuses on lots of other things as well. It controls our breathing, when we're moving, when we're walking, all these sorts of things we're doing without thinking about it. We're doing them unconsciously. But this really core part, all it focuses on is looking for threats. It sees a threat, bam, it triggers us into red alert. Klaxons going, red alert, triggers our adrenaline and everything else to prepare our body to run or attack, fight or flight, right? So that kicks in instantly, very, very, very quickly. Starts prepping the body, starts getting all the adrenaline and everything going. And that's what's kind of responsible for increasing the heart rate, perhaps increasing the speed of breathing. It can start to make us tremble a bit with it as it's, we're getting ready to, all that kind of energy building, ready to do something. The unconscious starts feeling all the nervousness and the fear that we originally associated with that thing the first time we learned that this was dangerous. So that heightens the emotions there. Our conscious, leisurely conscious, comes along ages later. Now, in reality, this is all in split second, but the conscious takes longer than the unconscious, which takes longer than that core bit. So our conscious later comes along and goes, you know what? That thing isn't dangerous to us. It's not a problem. So now you've got part of your mind going, ah, and part of your mind going, eh. So overall, your brain's now receiving different inputs. Some part of it is saying this is going to kill us. Part of it is saying there's no problem here. So the brain's kind of going, well, I don't know what the heck to do. So that's kind of where you can even get the freezing response, because your brain's getting so many conflicting things. And by the time you're able to consciously rationalize, this is not a problem for us, your body's already kicked into survival mode. It's already got the adrenaline coursing through your system. It's already got your heart pounding away to get more oxygen to the muscles to enable you to make a speedy reaction. And you can't switch that off instantly. So that's why, even though we know the thing isn't a danger to us, we still can't logically rationalize our way out of it when we're in that situation. Yeah, not very nice, right? So, I mean, we've said we learn phobias, we learn fears. Let me give you an example of just how we might do that. I'm going to take the example of dogs. Now, most fears, phobias, as with most stuff that we learn, we tend to learn most behaviours and actions and so on that we learn. We tend to learn before the age of about 7. There's various neurological reasons for that. We'll explore that in another episode if that's of interest. Doesn't mean that you can't develop phobias later on in life. Absolutely you can. But they tend to originate before about 7. Now, let's take an example of dogs. So suppose you're a 3-year-old and you're going off to the park with your mum and dad. And you're going off to the park to play. So you go off, you're all off there. Your mum and dad meet some other grown-ups and they do what grown-ups do. They get talking to each other and it's all really, really boring, right? So you wander off a bit on the grassland to have a wee play and a wee explore. And a dog appears and comes racing towards you. Because it wants to play. I mean, the dog just wants to play with you, right? But you've not encountered one before, and all you see is just this big, slobbery mass of fur and teeth bounding towards you, maybe even barking. It's just going, oh, play with me. But you don't know that. And you're kind of think, oh, what's this? Ah! Scream for help, because you want your parents to guide you as to what to do. Now, your parents are too far away to be able to physically hold you, reassure you, protect you, whatever. So they may be sort of scream and yell at you to come to them and yell at the dog to get out of the way and whatever. So they're now really reacting. They're shouting and screaming and maybe waving frantically. Oh my word. These are our parents. They're like gods to us. They're unflappable. And they are panicking about this and really, really screaming. Oh my word, this must be something that is really dangerous. This thing is going to eat us. This is terrifying. You've got massive emotion there. You are terrified. And in that moment, your unconscious associates this terror and this perceived threat to life. It associates us with this thing, which we later discover is called a dog. So, at that point, we've learned this thing is scary. It's seared in our brain. So, of course, next time we see a dog, it recalls all this emotion, the panic, the fear, the terror. Whoa, starts to kick us into overdrive. And so it does every time we see a dog, or after a while, even when we think about a dog, or even hear the name, hear the word. It brings back all these emotions, brings back all this experience, terrifies us, kicks us into fight or flight response. That's how we get phobias. So I guess the question here, the next question is, can we get rid of phobias or are we stuck with them forever? Yes, we absolutely can conquer phobias. I've helped countless people over there since 2010 to do just that, to conquer their phobias. I conquered my 3. I mentioned I had 3 phobias. Completely conquered all 3 of them. And yes, we absolutely can conquer phobias. And no, you don't have to go through all that frankly barbaric exposure therapy and conditioning and all that kind of unpleasant, uncalled for nonsense, you know, the sort where you gradually expose yourself more and more to the thing that terrifies you until you're kind of able to cope with it. No, you do not have to do that. It's barbaric, it's unpleasant, it takes a long time, and it's not very effective, and it's unnecessary. The tools I use, mostly based around NLP, sometimes with a bit of hypnosis just to kind of really polish it off, but mostly based around NLP, which is basically talking directly with your unconscious in its own language and helping it to make sense of the experiences it had, so that instead of learning that a dog is something to be terrified of, it it allows it to eliminate and just get rid of all, dissipate and get rid of all the negative emotion that you experience in that first encounter. Which then means next time you encounter a dog, there isn't the emotion there. So you don't have that emotional overload, which means your conscious part is able to go, yeah, no, that's absolutely fine. Oh, it's a cute fluffy dog, let's give it a stroke. Or whatever. So yes, you absolutely can conquer phobias. And what we do is we basically rewire the neurology around that area. Allow your brain to make the new connections. Allow the brain to remove the negative emotion. Allow the brain to realize, oh, I get it. I thought it was a threat. With hindsight, I can appreciate, no, it's not a threat. It is safe. So I can rewrite my rule book. I can remove the emotion. And it allows us to have a much more positive reaction to whatever it was that used to scare us. Spiders, I mentioned I used to be terrified of spiders. Absolutely fine with them now. Heights, not a problem. I mean, it used to be, I remember one time I climbed up, there's a ski jump just on the outskirts of Oslo from an earlier Winter Olympics. Not the most recent Norwegian Winter Olympics, but a much earlier one. And you can climb up in this building, climb up the stairs, up, and kind of look out at the top and get great views everywhere. Even climbing that, even though I knew I was inside and it was safe, because I knew I was getting up high, that used to terrify me. When I went up, I almost petrified. Now with heights, absolutely fine. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to start running along ridge tiles because that's just stupid. But I have a healthy respect for heights and I am able to handle heights without issue. Social phobia, I used to hate the thought of speaking with strangers. Nowadays, it's not a problem, and in the right circumstances, I can thoroughly enjoy it. In other circumstances, I just get on with it. It's like, okay, we have to do this, let's do it. It also means I can be on stage now, do stuff on stage. I've spoken to 800 people on one stage one time, loved every moment of it. I had countless other people who have helped to completely conquer their phobias. And usually we do it in a single session. The fastest I've ever helped someone, the fastest they conquered their phobia was just under 10 minutes. Usually it takes a little longer than that. A session, half an hour to an hour. Completely gone. Now, there's an interesting thing when you get rid of your phobia, because you get rid of it so quickly. Sometimes it takes the rest of the mind a little bit of time to kind of catch up to this fact, the fact that you've got rid of that phobia. It's kind of like, you know, those foam memory mattresses you get where you push your hand down, push your weight down on it. It kind of molds to the shape of your hand. Take your hand away, but there's still that impression of your hand there. It takes a little while for it all to pop back up to normal. And that can kind of happen with your mind, because you've gone through most of your life scared of whatever it is, and it takes the rest of your mind a bit of time to cotton on to the fact you're not scared of that anymore, because the rest of the mind isn't involved in the fear, but the rest of the mind knows that, oh, when we see a spider we freak out, so spiders, we're scared of spiders, all right. It takes the rest of their mind a bit of time to cotton on to that fact that, oh, hey, actually, oh, okay, I get it, we're not scared of spiders anymore. I don't do anything about being scared, but I know another part of my mind does the fear. But, oh, it's not doing it now. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so it can take a bit of time for the rest of your mind to catch up to the fact you're no longer scared. Our best illustration of this was a lady I helped, one of the first ladies I helped, back in 2010. She was petrified of spiders to the extent that she could not go into the bathroom in her own home if there was no one else there, in case there was a spider there. So she couldn't go to the toilet if she was alone in the house, in case there was a spider there. That causes some problems, right? So we had our session, worked together. At the end of it, I said to her, so how are you feeling about spiders now? And from the responses and from the way she'd gone through it, I knew she'd conquered her fear. I knew she was over. So just checking with her, how are you feeling about spiders? She goes, well, I don't know. Interesting. Interesting. Previously, she had said, terrified him. Now she's going, well, I don't know. Okay. Because I knew I'd see her again the next morning. I was like, okay, tell you what, go home, see how you get on. Because she was saying, I'd have to see a spider in order to know if I was scared of it. So, okay, go home, see what happens, and let me know in the morning. Saw her the next morning. So how do you get on? She says, well, I still don't know. Okay, what happened? Well, I went home last night and I went looking for a spider to see if I was scared of it. But I couldn't find any. So I still don't know if I'm scared of them or not. Said to her, hey, wait a minute here. So let's get this right. You went home. You were actively looking for a spider. You didn't find one. You're disappointed you didn't find one. And you're telling me you're still not sure if you've got over your fear of spiders or not yet? And she's going, yeah, I guess you're right. Because previously, if someone had said to her, oh, go home and see if you can find a spider, she'd have been, no, I'm not going to look for a spider. It can take the mind a little bit of time to cotton on to the fact that, hey, actually, I've got over that fear. Which can be really rather interesting. But the point is, absolutely, you can conquer your phobia and you don't need any of those exposure treatments or any of that nonsense. Conquer it in a single session, bam, gone. And that works whether it's spiders, dogs, dentists, heights, flying, driving, any of the more perhaps esoteric phobias, whatever it is, you can absolutely conquer it. That's pretty much it for today, though, for this episode. I mean, we've taken a look at fears, we've taken a look at phobias, we've taken a look at how we get them, what the difference between fear and phobia is, we've taken a look at how we develop them, we've taken a look at how we can get rid of them. That really is it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you've enjoyed it, do me a favour. Wherever you caught this, watched it, listened to it, whatever, wherever you got this, subscribe, pop in a comment, rate us, give us a rating. 5 stars would be ace. Share it with other people. This will help us to get out there and help more people to find this sort of information. That would be absolutely awesome if you could do that. Will you do that for me? Please? Thank you. That really is it for this one. I will catch you in the very next episode. But until then, take care, look after yourself, and remember, change is always possible. And when you change your mind, you quite literally change your life. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.